Hey everyone, this is Sydney Shute from Victory Condition Gaming, and you're listening to the Victory Condition Gaming Podcast.
Hey everyone, welcome to Victory Condition Gaming. My name is Doug. Today on the show, we have Magpie Games' Brendan Conway on to talk about their Kickstarter for Zombie World, which is doing phenomenal on Kickstarter right now. It's really cool project, and I was really excited to have them on. Kent Blue joined me as my co-chair on this session, so I'm really excited to have you folks listen to it. Before we start, though, I would like to acknowledge the fact that this podcast is made possible by our supporters over on Patreon. Thank you guys so much for supporting what we do here on the show. I'd really like to express the thanks to Bob Beaver, Ben Higgins, Deborah Streeter, Eric Bloat, Jason Hunt, Michael Harrington, and Tyler Thomas for their contributions. If you would like to help improve the show, feel free to check out our Patreon at patreon.com/victorycondition gaming. I'm going to send it over to our session with Brendan. Welcome to Victory Condition Gaming. My name is Doug. We have Brendan Conway from Magpie Games on the show. He has designed, co-designed Zombie World. He's also the co-founder of Magpie Games. And we're here to talk a little bit about the Kickstarter that's going on. If you are interested in anything that we're talking about tonight, click on the link down below in the description. Check it out. It's awesome. It's very, very cool. If you follow the show at all, you know that I am a big post-apocalyptic fan. I love that genre. I love the theme. And so when I saw this product, I was really, really excited about it. So I'm so excited to have Brendan on. Brendan, thank you so much for coming on today.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
And my co-host today, or my co-chair, I should say, not co-host, because, you know, he's pretty much, he's been on enough so that he's pretty much got an equal stake in this show as much as I do. Mr. Kent Blue from Roll to Play Podcast. Kent, thanks for coming on.
What's up, everyone? Doug, I'm going to remember that whenever you hit the big time, that I have an equal stake in Victory Condition Gaming.
50-50 partners now at this point, I think.
Oral agreement. I'm away. I mean,
it's on the internet. Everybody heard it. So
true.
I think it's binding.
Internet, yeah. It is, absolutely.
No, I'm glad to be here. Anybody who knows my show knows that I really like Magpie Games and a lot of stuff that they do. So it's a pleasure for me to be here to chat with you, Brendan.
Thank you very much, sir.
So Brendan, why don't you give us a little introduction about you and tell us a little bit about you, what you've done. You've worked on some really big titles and some really big projects in the industry, and yeah, why don't you let folks know?
Sure. So I really got into doing work on RPGs professionally when it's such a goofy story that I think at this point perfectly encapsulates my approach to things. We ran a Kickstarter for, not we, I wasn't even part of it, but there was a Kickstarter for like a small convention event in New York City. And just to make sure we had enough funding to get to the actual facilities. And I offered, because I was going to run games for it, I offered to essentially give my notes on the Dungeon World game I was going to run as a reward. Like, everybody would get this cool campaign thing that I planned out. It was supposed to be multi-tables, so it was useful for if you wanted to run like a 12-person Dungeon World game. And you know, it was not a big deal, but I figured it was just a nice little Benny. And Mark Diaz Truman, who was running that campaign, sort of agreed. And ultimately, I turned in like a 50,000-word document to him. And he said, so we're not going to just give this to people. this is too much. We're gonna make this an actual thing. Very kindly, he said it was really cool, but it was just too much.
Sure.
That ultimately turned into the Last Days of Anglekite Kickstarter. And like that was Anglekite. That was that first book that was mine that I ever published. It was a setting for Dungeon World. And that Kickstarter funded two other Chaos Worlds, and that was kind of the start of it for me, alongside then Mark bringing me in to help work on the Firefly RPG at the time.
Right.
So since then, like, I got more and more involved with Magpie. Mark and Marissa Kelly had founded Magpie a couple years earlier, and then they brought me in eventually as a co-owner. And with Magpie, like, I helped do Apillion, some of the edits on it. I helped, I did the rules editing on Urban Shadows. And then eventually my big, big first project was Masks. Masks of the New Generation, which we put up on Kickstarter and did pretty darn well.
Did very well.
Yeah, we like that was one of those. Okay, so this is completely not what we expected, but in like the good direction. This is excitingly not what we expected. And then that has been its own incredible thrill ride to like fully do that game, to then support that game, to come out with new supplements for that game, and I mean, it is this joyful thing of getting to hear other people play it and hear these names of superheroes and be like, that's fantastic. And, oh, you made that character? I know what pain you're in for because I made it that way. It's delightful. And yeah, it's been a pleasure and a thrill ride since then. And just going more and more. Like, we all at Magpie work on each other's stuff. Nice. We all assist on each other's stuff in our different capacities. And so there's an element to that of like Cartel, for instance, which Mark Diaz Truman kickstarted a couple months ago, yep, is like it's his baby through and through and through, but I will be doing the rules editing on that when, it comes through as a book, for instance. So
nice.
Yeah.
Nice. Kent, I think you actually passed that Cartel over onto me at one point, and were telling me all about it.
Yeah, I think so. I was definitely following it, the Kickstarter and everything as it was going on. I'd heard about it before. I think there was an ash can of it before that I'd checked out and everything.
Now you're on Kickstarter yourself after this mass success, and you've got Zombie World, and this is a totally different beast than a typical RPG book. Why don't you tell folks? Why don't you give like folks the 3-minute sales pitch on Zombie World if you want?
Absolutely. So, Zombie World is a tabletop role-playing game of zombie horror. It's card-based, and the whole point here is that we are going to give you a box. It's a relatively small box, approximately the size of like the tiny Epic games, if you're at all familiar with those, approximately around that size. Should easily fit in your bag. And that box will contain everything you need to play. It'll contain all these play mats that you can write on with a dry erase marker that function as your character sheets and as the basic rules for all of the different characters. And it includes all the different cards you need. It includes its own dry erase marker to make sure you can write with it. And the rule book, we're going to keep it pretty tight and short so it fits in that box. And the whole point here is to solve that moment that we've seen so often at conventions where you're like, I'm a little tired, I don't have any character sheets printed out, but I want to play something. Like, my friends are here, I'd love to just play a game. What do I do in this moment that doesn't require me to go and do a whole other set of things to actually provide the supplies for this game? Sure. The answer is this box.
Zombie World, yeah.
Zombie World, and you, it'll get you playing very quickly, and the core of it is zombie fiction, right? Like, it's been 6 months since the zombies have arisen. The world is pretty much broken and horrible, and you are trying to survive with your friends in your enclave. And the point here, though, is we all know zombie movies. We all, at some point, have almost certainly encountered some zombie fiction somewhere along the way.
Oh, fiction. I thought you were going to say we encountered zombies. Well, I have encountered, you know. In my hometown, if you've ever been to my hometown.
Well, that means you have extra expertise for the game, of course. Yeah, that's so you have a leg up on everybody else.
This is true.
And the thing here is it lets us get there really quickly into the fun, into the action, while it's not like it mimics any specific zombie narrative. They're always different and unique to your particular table, the cards you draw, the random things you get. But by being this touchstone that we can all access, it means that there's a lot less cognitive load. And so again, it hits this notion of we can get into play real quickly. We just crack open the box, make our characters quick, and we're into the game.
Very cool. I love that. That's kind of, we've featured some other RPGs that are similar to that. Like that seems to be something that really a lot of publishers are trying to strive for, because I think folks really like the storytelling and some of that back end, you know,
character creation, that stuff that takes like an hour to an hour and a half to get everything all set up, yep, just seems to be a drag. And so everybody wants to just get right to the action. I think that's great that a lot of publishers and a lot of designers are trying to shorten that process.
Yep. It's such a classic trouble. We have games that are pretty heavy. And I mean, even Masks, a lot of the time when I run a first session of Masks, it'll take an hour to 2 hours to fully create our characters and our situation and everything. And that's not to say that that isn't part of the joy of play. Like the concern I've heard people raise when I come away from a session like that is rarely, if ever, that was a waste. It's always, gosh, I wish we got to play another session because I just didn't get to do this character enough. But I loved setting everything up. But the whole point is, like, gaming is so enormous and the needs of gamers are so varied for any given situation and any given group of people. We want to have those games that you can take that time to set up your complicated campaign and really dive into these characters. And we want to have the game where it takes you 5 seconds and you're into play. Sure. Like, you want both kinds of things. You want everything in between. So for our part, this is definitely us sort of saying, like, we haven't really done as strongly of a, like, 5 seconds and you're in kind of game before. That's our goal here.
Nice. No, I think that's great. How long have you been, has Zombie World been in development with the...
I know I've been hearing about it for a while.
Have you really?
I have, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, well, I'm glad that that's in a good note. For us, yeah. It's like, it's been 4 years. It's been a while.
Wow.
And in many ways, it has been this weird experience for this particular game where it came out of, we played Dead of Winter together, and Mark and I had this big discussion about the game, what we liked about it, what we didn't like about it, and it came to, like, well, what if we had an RPG that was focused on a community in a zombie apocalypse, and what if we did it like this? And we almost spent one weekend together and had the rules, the core rules, but then that 4-year process has been refining it and nailing it so it does exactly what we want, and nailing exactly what we want the components to be, and all the individual little cards throughout the game. Like, for a while, we thought it would be more accessible if you only needed an actual deck of playing cards. Regular playing cards. But what we realized over time of trying it out, experimenting it, it always kind of worked. Because the core of it was fine, but that moment of, I pulled an 8 of spades, and I need to now find out what this card means, I have to go check something else, and then basically I have to write it down myself, It all added just enough friction that it slowed everything down, it made it all a little bit less fun, and the instant we switched over to, okay, here's your card, and it has everything it says already on it, everything flowed so much better.
Sure.
So it's the kind of thing where, like, that's obvious in retrospect. Of course, that's what it would be. Of course, the whole time that should have been in our head. But it took time to really experiment and see it and learn these things over the course of trying it out in different contexts and with different people.
Nice. So, Ken, you've been here. You kind of have your ear to the pulse of the industry a little bit more than I do. I heard about this, like, shortly before the Kickstarter, and but you're a big Magpie fan anyway, so I guess you kind of have your ear and you kind of, you know, are eager to hear whatever they've got coming out.
Yeah, just through, like, newsletters and stuff where it had been tested at different conventions where it was being tested. And, you know, I mean, I still like zombies. I know some people suffer from, but, you know, zombies are really kind of an important thing to me growing up. So anytime I see the word zombie, and then, you know, in association with Magpie Games, I mean, it was on my radar and kind of never left, you know. So every time I could see something for it, I read about it. So
nice.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
I'm glad we kept that title then.
Now, something, and sorry, Doug, if you're not ready to get to this point yet.
No, go for it.
So with me, whenever I see world in a title of a game, and with Magpie, I know y'all do a lot of Powered by the Apocalypse. And I think this game has some touches in that, but I mean, it is card-based, you know, instead of the 2d6 that comes with Powered by the Apocalypse. But I guess kind of elaborate on that, like how this maybe ties in with Powered by the Apocalypse, you know, as much as you want to.
Kent, that was actually going to be my next question. That's amazing.
Equal stake.
Equal stake, 50-50 stake in this channel.
Well, we most of our games by far are powered by the apocalypse. It's how we describe them. It's how we think of them. But as always with this name, it's this classic thing of like, well, how far can you go and have it still be that thing? And what does it mean? And what exactly is that providing? So here there's this thing of like, if you're familiar with Apocalypse World, you'll come in and you'll see the structure of moves, the when you do X, Y happens. And you'll see like we have a distribution of cards that you use instead of the dice to resolve those moves. But it looks kind of similar to the dice. The actual number of cards is designed to somewhat reflect the probabilities of rolling two six-sided dice and adding a stat. And we use some of the same terminology. We say, this is a hit, for instance. The things where it isn't really powered by the apocalypse in the same way come down to, for instance, your characters here, unlike most powered by the apocalypse games, and always exceptions, but you get a playbook in most apocalypse games. You get this character sheet kind of thing that describes the role you fill or some sort of niche. It offers you a level of unique qualities that nobody else is really going to have. It gives you all your cool stuff right there. We have completely eschewed that because when you make your character in Zombie World, we deal you some cards and then that's who you are.
I love this. And I love this part of it.
It is one of those things where, like, again, at the start of it, we were like, okay, let's see how this goes. This could crash and burn. And then it has so consistently turned out to produce these surprising and interesting characters just over and over and over again. And full credit to the people playing. Obviously, they put the pieces together to fully flesh out those characters. But still, it's wonderful to see these random characters and then to have the players come at it from this different perspective where when I take my time and I'll use Mask as an example. I create my Nova character and like I am so deeply into this character and I've fleshed out who I think they are and their cool powers and I'm excited to play them. There's this thing where I have created a protagonist and I want this protagonist to have their time in the spotlight and I'm psyched. When I deal you like four cards and you're into play, you're like, this still is a cool character, and I'm psyched because I have this card that says I have this thing, and it's neat. But also, like, if I die, and you probably will, you make a new, like, it's fine. It's fine. It's not, nowhere near as huge of an investment. And you get back into play because I deal you another four cards, and you're back.
Right, right.
That's really cool. I like that quite a bit. Yeah, that's really interesting.
And I love the fact that let's talk about these four cards that you deal to folks, because I really love this. It tends to, like, my wife and I, we're big Walking Dead fans, and like I love how thematic the way you have your character creation set up, because in the Walking Dead show, you just kind of get, all of a sudden you get introduced to a player you don't know any or a character, and you have no idea like what they've been through or who they are, who they've been previously. So I, like, as soon as I saw your character creation, I'm like, oh my God, this is amazing. Like, I would totally get, you know, all my Walking Dead buddies together and we would play that all the time, just because it just plays just like the TV show almost. So anyway, sorry, I didn't mean to. I went on like a five-minute rant about how much I love it, but
Well, I mean, thank you. Yeah, like that. You saying that is exactly what we're going for, right? Like, you hit the moments that we want. You hit, like, we want you to have this thing where you might meet somebody, and all you know is this is a person who is covered in blood, and is holding a shotgun. And that's all you know. Deal with it. Go from there. So even at the start of play, you've been in this enclave for a little bit, and the enclave, depending upon your particular choices, it could be like, this is your prison enclave, this is your farmhouse enclave, whatever the case may be. So this is the sort of settlement and community that you have been living in together. But even in that enclave, not everybody necessarily knows much or anything about you, because you don't necessarily trust these people, right? Like, you came together to survive, but not necessarily because you like anybody here. So what I do is I deal you a past, I deal you two presents, and I deal you a trauma. And your past is who you were before Z-Day, before the zombies came. It'll be like, I was a cop, I was an accountant, I was a martial arts instructor, whatever the case may be. Your two presents refer to who you have become since Z-Day, the role you fill in the community at large. And this part is public because this is what you've actually been doing for us, right? Like, this is what you have done in the community such that we have any way of knowing who you are. Sure. And then your trauma is this baggage that you carry that represents like how you deal with all you have suffered since Z-Day. Not a single person has come through this unscathed without suffering tremendous loss, and they all have their damage. So your past and your present start the game face down. So not only do you not get a choice with those, they just are whatever you dealt, they start unknown to anybody but you. But your presents, you get to pick one of the two presents. So you have a little bit of leeway and wiggle room to sort of sort that out, make something that makes sense. And then that starts face up. Everybody knows what your present is.
Sure.
Over the course of play, you can reveal your past and you can reveal your trauma. And at those moments, that's when the effects on the cards actually start to have an effect on play. And you know, you might get an immediate bump to one of your stats. You might get a condition that says you clear stress every time you get two other people to fight each other or something, right? Depending upon exactly what you got. And then there's this final piece of it where other people have ways where they can sneak a peek at your cards. So it's like when I have a conversation with you and we kind of open up to each other and I'm being perfectly honest, like, I'm worried about you, man, because you've been seeming real rattled lately, and that time that you shot the warden in the face, that was pretty alarming. So what's up with you? And if I get a hit, if I succeed on this move, it's possible I can take a look at your trauma and see exactly what is up with you, and then slide it back to you. And now I'm like, well, I'm going to treat you completely differently now, because that's great. I'm just gonna I'll be over you. Bye. Right. And we want this tension of, what do I actually know about you? Which of your cards are face up? The minute that card comes face up, suddenly it's like, oh, everything clicks into place. I suddenly understand your character in a way I didn't before. And again, I'm going to treat you totally differently now because you're a threat in a way I didn't understand before. Mm. Or you're not a threat suddenly. Like, everything I thought was dangerous about you has gone.
Yeah, that's awesome. I like that hidden aspect of it. Oh wow, yeah, that's incredible.
As soon as I saw that, I'm like, oh my god, this product is just, I gotta have this in my life. I've got to put it on my table, and I got to have all my buddies, because we have big Walking Dead nights whenever there's a new episode. You know, we get, you know, 5-6 people over the house, and we all sit and watch Walking Dead. You know, whenever there's a new episode, we could all come over like a couple hours early and play Zombie World ahead of time and make our own episode. And I think everybody would just have a blast with it, because it grabs you just like that show does.
Yeah,
that would be awesome. Yes, hell yes. Well, and even attached to that, like, part of our goal here was to do what you just described. We want this game to be able to accommodate a lot of players. And it's often the case that when you have a bunch of players at the table, depending upon the game, with those heavier games, it can slow down. And like, they're not necessarily designed to accommodate that. But like Zombie World, we want to do 3 to 8 players, right? So we want the whole big group, especially because when you have 8 players sitting around the table, congratulations. I guarantee you several of you will be dead by the end of any given session. It'll be great.
Excellent. Max says loving this. Mike says it sounds very interesting. I will say, if anybody has any questions for Brendan, feel free to put them in the chat. We'll address them as we're going. Let's talk a little bit about how the games get started, because there's this aspect of a fate deck is included in this in Zombie World. You want to talk a little bit about what that is to get the adventure going?
Absolutely. So to take a quick step back, so there's that whole character creation process that we kind of just talked about. Before you would have done that, you would have made your enclave.
Oh, yep.
I alluded to this as like, you would have picked the prison, And we have a couple of cards for the prison specifically. And they will say, here are some of the special things that a prison lets you do that are different from anywhere else. Like, we refer to the fact that you might be able to throw somebody in a cell, for example. And then it has a set of options that you use to create your prison. You would choose scarcities and advantages. You would choose the features of your local area. You would choose some of the people in the prison with you on a higher level. And some of these are already picked for you. So, like, I think the prison starts with a noteworthy prisoner is always there. So when you create the prison, it's always the case that we'd be like, maybe our prison is Martha Stewart. Let's try that.
Hey, Sure.
Martha Stewart in a zombie apocalypse. That sounds like a good time.
And she's used to being in prison, you know? So, you know.
Exactly. So it's great. So now we have our enclave. We've created our characters, and to kick things off,
Now there's two enclaves in. I'll just so then that way we explain what's in the core book. There's two enclaves included in the product as it is. There's a prison and then there's a hospital.
Yep. In the core box, it's just those two, and then we have two expansions that add the farmhouse and the mall. Okay. As additional enclaves. And again, like, even with the same enclave, if all you ever played is the prison, speaking as, like, we have playtested the prison a ton, it will still be consistently different enough to provide interesting play. Just playing with the prison will not, like, it's not always going to be the same. But having the additional enclaves adds a tremendous amount more variety. Yeah, and then, of course, for our stretch goals, like the special things we're unlocking as a Kickstarter exclusive, we are unlocking additional enclaves, and this is our chance to be a little bit fun and kooky. So the first one we've unlocked is the Caravan, which is itself a moving set of vehicles as an enclave.
Sure. Nice. I love it.
Let's get a little bit of Mad Max up in your zombie story.
Yeah. Hey, you know?
Why not?
Absolutely.
So you would have created your enclave using whichever one you chose. And then the GM will pick from the fate deck just one card, and it will say something on it. These are time passes conditions. So during play, it could be the case that, like, cool, we're going to fast forward a month, and I'll pick one of these cards as well just to say something has happened in the meantime. And these will say stuff like an advantage breaks down or a scarcity becomes acute. And they keep that language fairly open-ended, because then you interpret it according to what you've picked. So a scarcity becomes acute. The GM looks over at the scarcities of your enclave, and you've got a scarcity of food. Let's just say you've got a scarcity of weapons, and you've got a scarcity of privacy. And so the GM might say, cool, so your scarcity of food becoming acute is pretty obvious. Like, you literally have no food in the entire prison. Your people are starving. You have to do something about this immediately. But also, the GM might say, scarcity of privacy becomes acute is kind of interesting, because what happens if these people who have to spend all their time together, the prison's just not cleared out enough that they have the space to spread out. They are, like, in each other's faces nonstop. It just explodes.
Yeah.
Two people cannot take it anymore. They get into a knockdown, drag-out brawl, beating the crap out of each other right on the floor of the prison. Something has to be done about this. Like, people are strained.
Sure.
All of this gives the GM a little bit of flexibility to sort of decide exactly what makes sense based on what everybody else has set up, while still giving you this framework of, it's not just completely open-ended. It is a scarcity, or it is an element of your surroundings spawn opposition. So, like, that local dangerous military base that you've chosen during enclave creation, well, guess what? They're coming by, and they're going to cause some trouble now, and so on and so forth. And then, like, you're off to the races. The GM has given you the initial situation. It's something you immediately have to deal with, and pretty much guaranteed dealing with that will cause more trouble.
it's awesome. I love how it just to me, it seems like there's, like, it's like zero GM prep. You're just sitting down, because I know Kent can, you know, relate to this. I know he does a lot of GM prep for his actual plays.
Yeah.
That's the one thing that kills me when I want to play an RPG and nobody wants a GM, and so I'm like, okay, well, I'll do it. Then you got to put all this time and effort into it ahead of time. This, you just pretty much just sit down and play, which I think is just really great aspect of this product.
Yep. And that is exactly the objective, right? Like, we don't want you to have to spend a ton of time thinking. I mean, if you want to spend some time thinking of awful stuff to happen, feel free. But we definitely want you to be able to open it up then and there, not having prepped at all, and still have a grand zombie story time.
Sure.
I mean, it sounds like a pretty good tool for even like the more beginner level GMs. You know, it kind of gives you a lot of stuff that, I mean, to play off of almost immediately that you don't have to think of, you know, beforehand. So even as a tool for that, it sounds really good.
Now, my question for you, Brendan, is this more geared for more for like one shots, or can you play like a multiple session, you know, or like a campaign type a game with Zombie World?
Yeah, Doug's still on my patented question.
Oh, you've been a 50-50, man. We're 50-50,
right.
50,
you know, like it's his question now.
Exactly.
Zombie World definitely can do the one shots easily. That was a core game objective, and we think of those as let's play a zombie movie. But it absolutely can also do longer term play. And the nature of that is a little bit different than we may be used to in some RPGs, right? Where, again, I'll go back to Masks. Like, that's about this group of characters. And we are following this group of characters through a comic book series. And they are the core of the entire story that we're telling. But in Zombie World, the core is not any given character or even set of characters. Because, like, we talked about how fragile they are. They die. They get bitten by zombies. They shoot each other. Characters cycle in and out. The core of the story is this enclave, this actual community, this thing that you're trying to build and hopefully make something that can survive the onslaught of the world around you. And just by following that, we can stick with this over the course of multiple sessions as you deal with these scarcities and you get that food and bring it back to the enclave and you deal with the fact that somebody finally decides, well, I'm now in charge of this entire place and everybody has to listen to me and so on and so forth. Like, you actually can build, improve, and change this community. And it's always possible your community would fall apart, but it's also possible you'll make something that actually lasts.
Sure. Very cool. Ken, I have another question. I just didn't want to.
Oh no, go for it.
I always feel like I'm cutting Kent off before.
No,
I,
go for it.
Okay. I don't want to be rude. Now, how I know that there, you deal with zombies and walkers uniquely in this game, since it's a card based system. There is the zombies actually have their own deck of cards. So let's talk about that. Let's talk about that aspect of dealing with zombies. In Zombie World,
since I GM the game a lot, it's maybe, you know, one of my favorite decks.
Sure.
So we call it the Bite deck.
Nice.
Give you, you know, an idea of what it's about. There are 15 cards in the Bite deck, and one of them, a single one of them, says you have been bitten. And so you draw from this Bite deck, like, basically when you interact with zombies. If you came at a single zombie with an axe, I actually probably wouldn't be worried about can you kill it, because it's one zombie. And Zombie World defaults to the kind of slower, shambler kind of zombie. So, like, yeah, a guy with an axe versus a single zombie, you've got a pretty good shot of coming through and just killing it. But it's still always dangerous. So I might say, cool, it's just dead, but draw a Bite card. And then a number of moves throughout the game will tell you to draw a Bite card or demand that you draw a Bite card for particular reasons. Like, if you're fighting a whole bunch of zombies, we have a whole move for that. And then that will almost certainly have you draw a Bite card. When you draw it, there are some that say you're safe and nothing happens. There are some that say more zombies appear on the scene. And this is just that escalation, right? Like, I engaged with a bunch of zombies, I made a bunch of noise, and more are coming out hearing that, and the whole situation is getting just a bit more dangerous. There's a card that says something breaks. Like, it's been months since the zombie apocalypse, and nobody has been maintaining anything. And especially as more zombies come onto the scene, right? This is like they smash through the windows, or the roof collapses, or just something breaks that further complicates the situation.
Nice.
There's one that says that there's an escalation, whatever is wrong right now gets worse. And that's just giving the ball to the GM and saying, have fun. Like, make their lives terrible in this moment. And then there's that one and only one bite card in the entire deck that says, you have been bitten. Your death is guaranteed. You are going to die. But may not be right now. It may not be in the next 15 minutes. The GM will tell you when death finally takes you. And this is our way of being like, cool, you drew that card. You've been bitten. But now we can have that part of the story where, do you show everybody? Do you go back to the Enclave? Like, are you going to be honest about this? Do you go on that one crazy suicide mission where you have the grenade in each hand and you charge into the horde of zombies? Like, we had a guy, Jason Cordova of the Gauntlet, who Mark loves the story. He managed to go, he got bit like right in the beginning of the game session, and he hid it for the rest of the game from everybody else. It's just perfect. Like,
that's awesome.
You imagine that story and you're like, of course, we know the scene of when the character gets bitten and slides the sleeve down just to hide the bite. It gives you dramatic flexibility, and it means like you get bit at the end of the session, you know, when we're all wrapping up and we know this is a one shot. Yeah, cool. You get ripped to pieces and the zombies eat you and your screams echo down the corridors. Great. Fantastic. That deck, however, this is my favorite part. This whole deck, this bite deck that has only the single bite card, it doesn't get reshuffled until the bite card is drawn.
Oh, I love that. It just intensifies as it doesn't get drawn.
Exactly. And it is, people will look at it and they'll be like, cool, it's there's still 15 cards in there. I feel pretty safe. I should be safe, right? Like, I can draw. And then they'll later look and they're like, okay, half the deck's been drawn and we still haven't gotten the bite. I don't want to do this. Why don't you go deal with the zombies? I'm gone. I'm out of here.
I've got bathroom duty today.
It's this natural, like a Jenga tower, like right watching the bricks get pulled out of it. It is a natural thing just like that. People's tension gets ratcheted up. And then they think, the bite card got drawn. Cool. All tension is deflated. And then, of course, it turns out the bite card's on top of the deck after the reshuffle.
I like that, which you mentioned Jenga Tower. Like, Dread does the same thing of building. It builds that tension into kind of a horror-based game. That it's that extra layer of playing where you have this real tension that you don't know when this bad thing's going to happen.
Yep, there is absolutely a part of Zombie World's DNA that comes from Dread. Yeah, for sure.
I mean, even when you said, like, whenever you get that bite card, you're going to die. It's just a matter of when. Same as in Dread, when the tower falls, your death is imminent. It may not be immediate, but you are going to.
Yep.
Oh, I love it. It just, this, like I said, as soon as I saw the Kickstarter, and of course the theme hit me right away, and then as I was reading the Kickstarter, I'm just like, oh, I dig this. Oh, I gotta have them on the show. Let's just tell more people about how awesome this product is, because I just think it's awesome. Well, now let's talk about the pledges.
You got it.
The basic core pledge is $25.
Yep. And that'll get you the core box. That'll get you, again, everything you need to play. 17 play mats, that dry erase marker, the rule book, and 110 total cards.
Wow. Very cool. Now, the other thing that I really like about this is there's a print and play option that you're going to send to backers pretty close after the campaign ends. Isn't that correct? Or maybe I can't remember you said it was sometime it was.
Whenever you're a backer, you get that first update. It's in there.
Oh, see, that's what I don't. That's what I get. I get so many Kickstarter updates. I kind of just skim through them. And now I got to go print out some print and plays later tonight.
Yeah. The point of this was to say, here you go. Like, this is what we have right now. We are not, this is not final. We're obviously going to, like, proof it, adjust it, fix things up, make them perfect before we would go to print. But if you want to play it tomorrow and you're willing to put in some time on the cards and stuff, you have the file, so you have all the cards, you have all the playmats. We have a basic kind of rules document, which, again, we'll go through a lot of updating before we're finally done with it. But it should be enough that you can get playing if you want to. So you get that at that $25 level. Yeah.
Nice. Nice. Now there is a $50 level that is the core box plus the two expansions that we talked about earlier, the two Enclave expansions.
Yep.
Still get the access to the print and play as well. And the other thing that I really like about the last tier that you have is a $100 retailer pledge, which I think is awesome because, you know, I think brick and mortar stores need a lot of support, and I always love it when companies realize that you know what, we don't want to just bypass that aspect of the industry. We want to make sure that they're included as well. So why don't you talk a little bit about the retailer pledge if you
absolutely want. Yeah, so it's $100 retailer pledge, but you get essentially four times the $50 pledge. So you get four copies of the core box, you get four copies of each expansion, four copies of all the Kickstarter exclusive cards that you get at $50 level. You obviously get access to the print and play as well. And the whole point here is exactly what you're saying. We want to make this so that retailers can be like, oh, that's a great deal. Get a bunch off and it's enough for me to put them on the shelf. And for us, As the production company, we totally are of the mind that this is a game we want to look really cool sitting on the shelf.
Sure.
Like, yep. We want this to be the kind that somebody says, ah, oh, what's this? Picks it up and looks at it, right? So our entire goal here is to be as retailer-friendly as we can.
Nice. Michael's actually on the chat, and he says that the art is fantastic on this project, which is very cool. Can you give a shout out to your artists that you've had working on this for you?
Yes, absolutely. So, firstly, I will point to our art director in particular, because part of Magpie, Marissa Kelly, has done art direction for basically every single game we've done.
Nice.
And she does a fantastic job of just coming up with what needs to be done, making sure it comes through, finding excellent artists. So she deserves a tremendous amount of credit on herself, having worked with her throughout the whole process. For the art in particular, I'm checking just to make sure I get his last name correct, because I apologize.
No, I do that. Remember when we did Kent and I did a an Origins Predictions, Origins Awards Prediction episode, and I had to list off all the RPG designers, and I know I got like 90% of them pronounced incorrectly, which is unfortunate, but...
Yep. it's a thing I'm wary of, yes. So we are working for art with Mirko Paganesi. We have worked with him before on Bluebeard's Bride. He did some of the art for that. I think in particular the Tarot of Servants. And he did gorgeous art there. And so working with him here has been a pleasure. He did all of the illustrations on the cards. We worked with Megan Trott, who designed the icons that we use on a lot of our cards. The past, the present, the trauma icon. She designed the advantage icons. And those add a lot, just to make them instantly recognizable and like the sort of visual language combined with making the card actually look good. And I would be remiss without also mentioning Miguel Angel Espinoza, who is wonderful for layout. He has done the layout of all the cards. He is a champion for just coming up with stuff real quick. It's the kind of thing where I would just be like, can it kind of be like this? And he'll be like, sure. And he'll come back with something that looks way better than what I at all expected or asked for. We did a whole back and forth with the rules right now where I said that they're not final. So people will understand they're being updated. I just want them to not look just bad. I want them to look okay. And he goes away and he comes back and I'm like, this looks like the final product, man. Come on, man. Come on. Making this look bad.
Make it a little worse, because now the bar has been set. We gotta exceed this for the final product.
Like, now the text of the rules does not match the quality of the layout. Damn it. He's fantastic.
Nice.
Full credit to him as well for just doing such a great job.
Very cool. Very cool. Well, I'm very excited to I'm very excited to see where this project ends. You've got like 20. How many more days do you have left on as of today? It's like 26 or something.
Yes, we end August 12th or 13th. I forget which one. The one that's a Sunday. We have 22 days left. Yes.
Yes. Yeah. Excellent. Excellent. Well, very cool. It's I'm going to tell everybody, if you are a fan of the genre and you want a really awesome game to just kind of keep in your backpack at a con and just bring out and play with your buddies when you've got some downtime, or, you know, in between Walking Dead episodes. Go back zombie world by Magpie Games, because I think this is a product that I'm really, really excited about.
Thank you very much.
Brendan, where can folks find you on social media? Where are you guys going to be? Let's talk a little bit about where you're going to be in 2018 and where folks might be able to find you online as well.
Absolutely. So online, we have our magpiegames.com website where we will put up blog entries and stuff. I will often write there. And a lot of the communication and stuff about us, you can find us through the Magpie Games official media presence. We have a Twitter account that posts about stuff. We have our G+ account, our Google Plus account. We have a Facebook account and page. We have several communities for individual games on Google Plus. So if you are interested in any particular game, you can join like the Bluebeard's Bride community, or you can join the Masks community. We will be putting together a Zombie World community for the same purposes. For myself, I have a Google Plus account that I sometimes use just with my name. And then I am largely a technological Luddite who refuses to engage in the modern era. Despite being on a recording right now through my computer.
It's easier that way.
I agree with that.
It's a little bit of a cheat because of the whole getting to do it through the Magpie stuff. So,
sure.
But then for where we actually will be, we will be at Gen Con. We have a booth there, and we have an entire game room where we are running games throughout the entire convention. So people will be able to potentially like jump in on some of those if there are open slots. We will also be at PAX Unplugged end of November, beginning of December. We will have our own booth there as well, and we're looking into trying to get our own game room similarly. And we're at scattered additional conventions throughout the year. Like, we'll probably be at Metatopia in some capacity, the sort of game design convention in Morristown, New Jersey. And we are part of New Mexicon here in New Mexico, a yearly convention that's, bigger and bigger every year, and just a chance to play games for the most part. It's all about just playing games, having a good time, and myriad scattered other ones. Yeah.
Very cool.
I want to say real quick, today's the last day of any voting. Voting.
Yes,
sure. Bluebeard's Bride is up for best production. And believe me, it'll be a shame if that game does not win that award, because it is hands down the best produced game. I mean, best production values I've seen just in many a years. So,
thank you.
Today's the last day. Go out and vote for it.
I wasn't sure. I was going to mention that, but I wasn't sure. I thought the voting had closed yesterday, so that's why I didn't bring it up.
I had to look it up. I wanted to look it up. And I think Magpie, aren't y'all also in the fan pick one?
Yep.
I forget.
Yep.
Okay. Yeah.
As a publisher, yes. Thank you for bringing that up. And just to fully plug that again, that was Miguel too.
But yeah, anytime I can talk about the production values behind Bluebeards, I will, because it's fantastic. I mean, just beautiful book.
So. Yeah. I mean, everybody worked on the book. Marissa did an amazing job. Sarah Richardson did an amazing job. Strix did an amazing job. Yeah.
And Kent, let's plug Role to Play, because I've got a 50% stake in that now. since you've got 50%.
I didn't agree to that, but that's fine. No, roadtoplaypodcast.com will take you to our webpage over on the Fanoff Network, at roadtoplaypod on Twitter. You can find us at roadtoplaypodcast on Facebook. I was lucky enough to get roadtoplaypodcast everywhere. So nice. pretty easy to find.
Nice. That's awesome. All right, folks, that is going to do it for me today. And for my guests, I want to thank Brendan for coming on. I want to thank Kent for being my co-chair again. You know, and it's always a pleasure having Kent on. Brendan, we'll have to have you on again. I'm sure you've got other projects in the works, and I'm excited to see what Magpie has going in even after Zombie World.
Thank you so much. Yes, it was a pleasure, and I would be happy to come back and talk about Insert Turtle here.
Oh. This has been Victory Condition Gaming, because winning shouldn't be the only victory condition when you get to the table. We'll see you next time.